This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Ata, welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrics. My name is Fresh and my partner in crime, Botsang Modimo Memuilwa, is also in studio. Brother.
Brother Fresh, good morning.
How you doing, brother?
I'm doing very well. You know, I nearly called Trevor this morning and said, I'm so exhausted. Let's end the show for today. I didn't feel like coming up.
Lynn, now, you know, I woke up feeling a bit under the weather. Yeah. But I was like, the show has to go on.
What else? The followers and the viewers will be on our throats.
Yeah, no, the show
we'll
has to
regret,
go on.
We'll regret why we didn't show up.
But also, I had to also tell people that I met your lovely mother this past weekend. And I'm glad I met your mother.
Yes,
that I can blame someone for your craziness. Because I needed to go to the creator.
And by the way, she was very thankful for the surprise.
Of this madman here.
Yeah, she was very thankful for the surprise and the chocolates.
Yes, sir.
That I've learned from my sister. She's hiding them somewhere in the cupboard in the bedroom.
Oh, yes, because
she doesn't know her share.
I bought Botan's mom a pot plant and chocolates and sweets. So, Bozan didn't even know that our mothers love these hard-boiled sweets.
Yeah,
how do you not even know these things?
No, I mean, my mom never allowed us to eat sweets.
Mm.
So I'm very surprised that at her old age, she's turning 73 in exactly 1 month.
No, okay, no busy katon.
And you know, okay, not busy katon. He was telling us how bad the sweets are for cavities and things like that. But apparently she eats loads of sweets.
You know the crazy thing? My old man who is, 83?
Yes.
Never once went to the dentist. Not once. Never lost a tooth. But now in his old age, he had to go to the dentist other day because he's eating sweets. I'm like, oh man, what's going on, my man?
All people are not. You know, they're all saying they're becoming younger again.
The other day, he came for surgery about 2 months ago.
Yes.
It was the first time in his entire life in a hospital.
That's good.
In his entire life.
I hope we'll survive to that extent.
Now we're removing teeth. We're going for this and that.
Eyes.
Cataract surgery. Yay.
It's the junk we eat.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's the junk we chase. But anyway.
I'm not part of that statement. Yes,
can we start with Ntate Jonas? Was it supposed to be a special envoy?
A special envoy, yes.
To the United States, serving at the behest of President Ramaphosa.
Yes.
Why is there a lot of noise about this appointment?
Look, first, if you recall, when we spoke about a month ago, just before Rasool was chased out of the U.S., before he returned, we spoke about President Ramaphosa was looking to create a team of people that I was against, to say if we have an embassy there and it's properly staffed, why should they have a team of people that are going to engage the Americans? Because there was already, you know, a standoff between the Trump administration officials and the South African authorities in Washington. Now, this story of President Ramaphosa always wanting to deploy or to create a team of people that will engage the Americans amid Rasool, the then ambassador, it has been on the pipeline. And we should just remember that part. When we were in the middle of thinking that President Ramaphosa will be looking for appointing an ambassador who is impartial, maybe a diplomat, a career diplomat, to replace Ibrahim Rasool, then boom, he shocks us, you know, by continuing with the plan to can have a special envoy to can repair, if I mean, for lack of a better word, the relationship between South Africa and the USA. But that's the first part, that it has been on the pipeline. But the fact that it is Mcebisi Jonas, who is seen, one, as a Ramaphosa ally, both in politics and in business. We know that he was in the forefront of the campaign of Cyril Ramaphosa. We know that he's one of the board members or chairperson of MTN, the mobile company in South Africa, the biggest actually, and one of the biggest in the continent. That Mr. Ramaphosa was the chairperson before and is one of the shareholders.
Sure.
So they've got that business relationship despite both being from the African National Congress, which is the ruling party.
Mm.
But why the uproar is that, and it's funny that this was actually leaked or exposed by, is it Peter Price, the SABC correspondent in the USA?
Bryce Beast or something like this. Yes.
Bryce Pierce or something like that. Mm. He exposed that. He went to fetch, they say internet doesn't forget.
Mm.
He went to search a clip of, and that happened in 2000. Not in 2001, for Trump's first term.
Yes, when he was beaten by Biden.
Yes, yeah, when he was beaten period, by Biden. Yes. I think it was in 2020, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, 2020.
Yes. A clip where he was addressing one of the foundations, and he spoke about how Donald Trump is a narcissist, he's racist, and he's homophobic.
Mm.
And that's what caused the uproar to say, but Rasool was chased out of the United States for the same thing. Why would we want to send somebody who has done the same thing about the sitting president? Okay, that time it was not the sitting president. He had said it before.
Sure.
So that's where the uproar comes from.
Now, I heard Ntate Jonas on Talk Radio 702 earlier in the week on Wednesday or Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
And he was talking about how what he said at the Kathrada lecture was him speaking as an activist.
Yes.
And that it's in the past. He doesn't think it would be an issue and that it wouldn't affect his appointment or that it shouldn't affect his appointment. But my thing is we forget that The orange man is very petulant.
Yeah.
He's childish.
He's very childish, yes.
He's very vindictive. He's very spiteful at a certain level. The fact that the students who stood up against Israeli bombardment of Gaza,
mm-hmm.
whose visas are being reviewed,
yeah. mm.
or for simply standing up for Palestine, who are having their visas reviewed. The people whose social media posts all of a sudden are being checked before they get into the U.S. Why wouldn't Tate Jonas think Donald Trump is not childish enough or vindictive and spiteful enough to say, because you have said this about me, I should be fine with you coming to my country?
Fresh, there's various reasons. Politicians are some type of animals on their own. And, there's no permanent enemy and friends in politics. And Mbisi Jonas, people say he's a businessman. I don't know what business he ever been into, except the MTN thing. But he's a politician.
Mm.
And there's no permanent enemies. That's one. Two, Mbisi Jonas has been seen as a, in inverted commas, clean, uncorruptible person.
Yes.
That Trump has been making noise about leaders of the ANC who are corrupt, who have captured the state, who have stolen from the purses and all that. And Mr. Jonas is being seen, and albeit I've always said without any material evidence, despite what he presented at the Zondo Commission, that he's a whistleblower of the Guptas, and he denied or he declined a 600 million bribe that the Guptas, in inverted commas, tried to give him. And for that, it may play to his advantage, you understand?
Yeah,
but with Trump also, the second point I can mention is, look at how Trump's own vice president, Vance, had in the past insulted him, called him names and all that, and today he held his hand and campaigned with him to an extent that he's now his vice president.
Yeah, but we can't compare the two situations though, because more often than not, the people you stand against, whether it's at the Republican convention or the Democratic convention, the very same people you stand against trying to be president mm-hmm. will often take all of your dirty laundry
yes.
and bring it into the public. But once we are done with the campaign trail, more often than not, those are the same people you're going to bring into your team anyway.
Anyway, yes.
You know what I mean? We saw it even with the Biden presidency, that the people that he was up against were brought into his cabinet.
Yes.
Likewise
yes.
with Trump. With the previous
administration.
Yeah. With the previous administration.
Yes, yes.
So, but that's not to say he will not be childish about a foreigner calling him all of those things and still wanting to come and meet him.
I still do not know why did we go that route. It doesn't make
sense. So for
now,
you don't even understand why he's going there?
No. I understand what President Ramaphosa is trying to do. Okay. We don't have an ambassador there.
Sure.
Well, I don't even know if we have the chargé d'affaires, you know, at interim. But I understand to fill the gap to say, before we deploy an ambassador, and while President Ramaphosa is still looking for an ambassador,
yes.
let's close this vacuum, this gap, and repair the relation. But why Jonas is what I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me why MKBC Jonas, after those, he had made those utterances. Mm. And when I listened to him on Talk Radio 72 as well, because I listened to that interview, I actually came to a conclusion that he's a very unprincipled person.
Mm.
Because if you believe in a principle that you can't be dealing with narcissist, racist, homophobic people, when you are an activist, so does it mean when you become an envoy of the president or a political position, you stop in being anti-homophobia, you stop being anti-racism and all that? You understand? For me, that's lack of principle.
Mm.
I've always told people that I despise white supremacy and racism. And it doesn't matter whether I occupy a diplomatic or a pastoral position or a political position. It's a principle that I live with and I believe in. And for him to put a crocodile smile and say, no, but I was an activist, now I'm going to be in government work and all those things. It doesn't work like that, because our personalities tend to influence our performance at work. What we believe in tend to influence our, you know, sometimes it's wrong. Look, I'm sitting here because of my belief in anti-corruption and anti-dominance. I'm sitting at home. And I said, but I don't think he was the right person for the position. But there's a lot of, what do they call it? There's a lot of speculations that one of them is that because he was at the helm of the Iran-South Africa relations with MTN. Remember there was a story.
Yeah, there's also that elephant in the room.
That elephant in the room deal with. And I don't think President Ramaphosa and or his advisors apply their mind correctly, because then America has a problem with South Africa-Iran relationship of the MTN that was providing, what you call it, the network and systems, you know, to can dominate and suppress people in Iran, first of all. And then there was an Iran-South Africa nucleus, drama or stories. Then there was Iran that has been said to have been funding us taking Israel to the ICC and the ICJ. So there's those things that we need to deal with. Now, you can't take somebody who has been in the center of that and try and say, go and repair relations that were worsened by Ibrahim Rasool, but they were not created by Ibrahim Rasool. They were created by various things. Ibrahim Rasool was there for 3 months max. So now you take the same person who comes out of that situation. But Trump, being a business person, maybe sitting here having interest in South Africa's nuclear capabilities, in what MTN can do, understand? It may be. So, and then also somebody said to me, but what about the advisors of the president? And I said, we must always remember, even if you have advisors, you can reject their advice.
Absolutely.
And I said, South Africa should have known. I mean, it's not about security clearance. When you have an envoy like this, you don't even have to take them through security clearance like when you post a diplomat. That must have a top security clearance. That's about level 5 security clearance. You don't have to take an envoy, because it's not going to be stationed in Washington and work. It's going to be the person who's going to lead engagements between the Trump administrators or senior government officials with some senior government officials from South Africa. Now, somebody was saying, what about our intelligence did not know what this Bryce Moon person has exposed? I'm like, maybe they never even paid attention to that, but we should have known. We should have checked the things that they have said before. And the last week on our show, I said, I made an example to say one of the people I respect in politics is Reverend or his doctor now, Alan Busack.
Sure.
But because of his stand, the pro-Palestine stand, and he's not ashamed of that, he's not compromising, he can be a good diplomat, but not to the United States.
Sure.
Now you go and you take a person of the caliber of Mcebisi Jonas, and you want to send a look. It's there's no accreditation that is required, but there's two things that I suspect are going to happen. Either Trump is going to, you know, it's up to the US. They may just refuse to talk to him and be silent, like they've been blue ticking South Africa. Or they may simply, if they're fair and genuine and honest, they can actually refuse him visa, because he needs a visa to can be able to travel to the US. Yeah. And once they refuse him a visa, it will be clear to us. But the fact that the United States, it's already over 48 hours, you know, a week or days, that President Ramaphosa has made this announcement and the U.S. hasn't said anything. For me, it says either they're going to blue tick us and humiliate him, or they're prepared to engage him. And what is my take on that? I think that because he is coming from the foundations. You know these foundations that I've explained before? They are an arm and a tool of the imperialists. That's why this foundation, all of them, they are funded by the imperialists, America and the UK and what. Sadly, with Mcebisi Jonas, he is from the foundation that is pro-British, the UK.
Yeah.
Understand? Those Brandhurst foundations as well. Maybe because they recommended him, as people have been saying, South Africa people are concerned about the markets. South African people and politicians are concerned about business. Understand? And when business tells the government what to do, and Jonas is being seen as somebody who appeals to business. So they may have recommended him to President Ramaphosa. I personally do not think the appointment of Mcebisi Jonas came from Luthuli House. I think it came more from President Ramaphosa's cycles, and not necessarily in the ANC and the business cycles. The Trevor Manuels of this world, the Brandhurst Foundation and the Ahmed Kathrine, all these foundations that are actually running a parallel administration. And for that, the Trump administration may accept him.
So what do you think they should have asked him then? Have you ever said anything about Trump that is negative that might come back and bite you?
They could have asked that. He could have actually volunteered the information and stated his position.
Yeah, but based on the interview he did on Talk Radio 702, he's like, I was an activist then, it's not a big deal, bygones are bygones. He made it seem like it's not a big deal.
When he was an activist for what? When? 2020, that's 5 years back. Activist for what? Anti-imperialism, anti-Israel, pro-Palestine, anti-racism. Has he stopped? Has those things been resolved that made him to be an activist? That he has stopped now? Are those things not... Is Trump not a narcissist, homophobic, racist that he had claimed Trump is? Is he saying, no, Trump is not that person anymore, therefore I can talk to him? You understand? Look, I think we are shooting ourselves on the foot. I don't think this appointment is assisting us. And when this matter was exposed... I don't think President Ramaphosa was in a smart or diplomatic position to can reverse this, because it was going to be an egg on his face.
Yeah.
The honorable thing that could have happened was Jonas should have declined the position to say, no, I can't do this because of my principal position towards the United States of America, or towards Donald Trump, actually, not even the U.S., and therefore I'm not going to accept it. Look, there's a whole lot of people in our hands, and I if there's one thing that Mr. Ramaphosa has kept us confused about, it's specifically this appointment.
Sure.
You know, and it looks like also Mcebisi Jonas has a hold on, you know, very number of people in the African National Congress. And what is the hold for, one doesn't know, you understand? Because for me, he came up the ranks of an ordinary activist like any other activist. He joined the ANC through the United Democratic Front when it was formed as a front of the ANC, when ANC was banned. And so he's a young activist. He's not part of the Rivonia Trialists or the Robben Islanders or those who went to exile. And for me, there's nothing special that he did that no other comrades in the ANC have done.
Sure.
And why is he having so much power and hold over President Ramaphosa is probably one of the reasons why he's deploying him into all strategic positions. Because you remember he was part also of the Economic Strategic Advisory Team of President Ramaphosa at some stage. So let's wait and see how the Americans are going to react on this. But their silence says to me either they're going to humiliate us and embarrass us, or they're simply going to accept him because he comes from that bunch of ANC people that I don't think Trump was going to put him on the blacklist that he had proposed. That they are seen to be business people, they are seen to be moderate and more center-right than center-left. And for that, the Trump administration may accept him.
I think because there are a lot of South Africans who might be pro the narrative that the Americans misguidedly have about this country. That same ilk of think-alikes by now probably have tagged Elon Musk, have tagged President Trump on Ntate Jonas's statements.
Yes.
And maybe they haven't seen the tweets yet, but eventually they will, and eventually they'll say something. Because it's almost like Trump feels like every week he must randomly say something about South Africa. He did the same on Sunday, that I will not be attending the G20. Terrible things are happening in that country. It's almost like he has a scheduled tweet once a week that he must remind us why he's not coming here. And I suspect that Elon Musk schedules those tweets for him. Hence, I'm saying that they are quiet, because often a child who's quiet is busy doing something, eating peanut butter there in the corner. But they're gonna emerge again and say something.
I don't know. It's too long. The way they've been reacting.
No, watch.
Or maybe China kept them busy.
They've been busy with the tariff. I think they've been busy trying to understand, to show the president that more often than not, your tariffs are going to hurt your own people than anyone else.
Well, at least the tariffs are suspended for 90 days so that the people like Ndivisi Jonas can go engage. They still have 90 days to go. And they are for Africa, they were all limited at 10%. So this was the proper timing and appointment. Well, not the proper appointment, but the timing to appoint him to get, because the time to engage, you know, it's now.
Yeah.
But I think President Ramaphosa should have sent any other person, but not Ntebisi Jonas.
Sure. Let's talk about China versus the U.S. I mean, those are easily, I think China and U.S. alone account for just over 40% of global GDP.
Yes, and both of them are our number one and number two trading partners, and they are at loggerheads. Look, Tato, I think Jinping, the premier or the president of China, has actually demonstrated to the USA that they are no longer that superpower that they thought they are when it comes to markets and trade and all that. That China is not number one trading partner of many countries by mistake. It's because of the hard work they've put in investing in manufacturing of all sorts of goods, almost everything. That I think the China, whatever is not made in China, I don't know what is it that Chinese cannot make. But the fact that also every time President Trump will announce an increase in any Chinese tariffs, then they will even double.
Sure.
And as then, it's a slap on the American face to say, but don't think you are rattling us with this. You will still need our product, or we can impose the same. China's market, they are not consuming imported goods. They are actually flooding their goods into many countries, and that's what America is trying to control. But also, I don't think the USA is only focusing on control of influx of goods by using the tariffs. They are also trying to create a market for their own goods to can remove the Chinese goods off the market. That's also another challenge.
And who's going to make those? Who's going to build in this one presidential term? Who's going to build all these factories? How much are you going to be paying these people who are going to be making these iPhones all of a sudden? Now, for me, the biggest concern is this. The blatant corruption that comes with how this has been rolling out.
Yeah.
The fact that you're going to say, okay, China, you're going to be paying tariffs right up your bum, then all of a sudden, because it affects your billionaire friend, that it affects tech. Yeah. You want to say, except for technology and other
things. Technology, yes, yes.
That is corruption. Because it says, as a president, I have a price.
Look.
That's corruption, surely.
Fresh, politics are corruption. All these whole things, the fact that they started, and when he started hitting the pockets or the bank balances of the types of Elon Musk
of his friends.
And other billionaires, then he had to hold back because it is corruption. But that's how politicians work. I've always said we should not forget Donald Trump himself is a business person.
Mm.
He's not just a politician like the Bidens and other people.
But he's also a business person that has failed countless times. The fact that you've tanked almost 10 and bankrupted almost 10 different businesses.
And then what do you do?
It's nothing to frown upon.
What do you do? Mm. Then you enter politics to can make money, change laws, and mess up politics to can be able to fund your businesses. That's the game Donald Trump is playing. He is going to use the monies that he's going to hoard from these tariffs and taxes and penalties and what, to can start another business or to can uplift the businesses of his billionaire friends that may give him money in future, that may restart a new business with him in future. So he's using the political office to can run business. I mean, it happens all over the world. We always cry.
No, but not this blatantly, though. I mean, the fact that about a month or two ago, we spoke about it, that there's been a law, I think, since 1978, 79,
yes,
that outlawed American businesses paying bribes,
yes,
or greasing the palms of government workers in foreign countries. That was a whole law against it from the 70s,
mm-hmm,
because it used to be a thing. It used to be a thing that if we want to do business in X country, we can pay bribes.
Yeah.
It was a thing. And then they came up with legislation that said no American corporation will do this without being held accountable.
Yes.
The fact that he said we're going to repeal this thing so that our businesses can also compete fairly globally. That's you saying we're fine with you being corrupt. Go out there and be corrupt.
And
it's acceptable. Everyone is watching all of this unfolding, and we're just watching.
What could the world do?
But dare any other president
to do the same,
or a president from a third world country? The first thing they want to say is, "Aha, we knew le corrupt."
Actually, Donald Trump has exposed how corrupt the American politics are.
Yeah.
As you are saying, it is blatant. It does not mean it was not happening.
Mm.
And the other presidents, we can count from in our age, from the first George W. Bush via anybody, there has been corruption, whether it's through the arms deals, whether it's through, look at what they are doing now to can engage the DRC for security in exchange of minerals. I mean, those are the kind of corruptions. We know of how many American companies all over the world, they were found wanting in doing businesses in other countries, not in the United States itself.
Mm.
And it's just that Donald Trump is doing it unashamedly, and he is surrounded by people who are ruthless and merciless when it comes to making money. They will do anything under the sun to can make billions or to can milk their own state. So they're in a situation whereby if it collapses the American or economy, it is those, team of billionaires that will benefit to rebuild that economy.
Mm.
It is not about, politicians never think, for individuals or for ordinary citizens. And if they can go and dangle a carrot in front of ordinary citizens to make eggs and potatoes affordable in the U.S. and fuel and vehicles, if they can make them affordable in the U.S., the Americans will keep quiet. The Americans are worried more about their security and their cost of living. And if Trump can manage that part of them affording the basics and the cost of living and increasing, employment and opportunities, I don't know. And I don't think it will be possible to can build infrastructure or factories that will compete with China in the next 3 years and 6 months. It's impossible. It's unlikely. That's the first part. The second part is the volumes, even if they can build factories, the volumes that the Chinese produce, nobody will ever match them. And also due to their population, not only because of their skill, also due to their population. But lastly, the wages or the salaries that will have to be paid to the American citizens to can be able to do that mass production? And where will they export them to? At what cost compared to China? China has plucked the entire world at the moment.
Because long and the short of it is it has to make business sense for anyone to do it. You know, I laughed because there's been a clip going around about Deputy Vice President J.D. Vance talking about how China is just a bunch of peasants. And unfortunately, because your average American will never bother to read up on any country. Whatever the first impression of a country is what they'll carry for the rest of their lives.
And
a lot of people's impressions of China are based on data from 30, 40, or 50 years ago. And if anyone bothered to actually read up on the strides that China have made over the last 30, 40 years. It's the wildest transformation of any country. Wildest transformation.
And on all sectors, not on one thing, on almost everything.
So for instance, there's still the narrative that Chinese people work for slave wages. You know China's, what is it called? Minimum wage. You know the minimum wage in Shanghai alone? I've got a friend who's got a business in Shanghai. Minimum wage in Shanghai is 30,000 rand. 30,000
rand. That's a lot.
30,000.
And especially people, in an economy where things are not expensive.
There are people here who are working for two and a half grand a month.
But it's also
so I think we need to read up and catch up on any stereotype you may have of any country or any nation.
Americans don't read fresh. They don't read anything. Despite all the assets and the economy and the books and the technology they have, it has become clear that they do not read. I mean, as recent as this past few days, American leaders were still talking about how we have an expropriation. They even call it EWC, one of their senators, or two of their senators. One is a former pilot during the Iraqi war, some Jackson guy, and he's black. He was talking about how South Africa, they were tabling a paper in the Senate regarding how the USA should review its diplomatic relations, not diplomatic, but bilateral relations with the Republic of South Africa. And one of the elements they're mentioning there is that we've got the EWC, which is expropriation without compensation.
Exactly.
A whole senator going in front of the Senate and talking that absolute nonsense, and he's still being listened to. It's all over the news. It was presented, and for the fact that it was presented by a so-called black person, it holds more water because South Africa is being seen as a black country or a country led by corrupt black people. And therefore, when another black person in the USA is talking against South Africa, it holds more water. And it shows that none of these people goes and read. You know, go and take the South African official position paper on expropriation bill.
And it's a Google search away. It's one Google search away.
They are the founders and the makers of Google, and they're even failing to use that. You can actually go to the presidency or the South African government website and get these bills and read them and inform yourself before you go in front of the Senate or in front of the American media and mislead and lie to them. But it shows when people are brainwashed, when people are being remote controlled. And that's what happens. And go and talk to any American. I can tell you, majority of them, they believe what is being said about South Africa. It's true. You know, I look at Donald Trump's red ties, and I wonder if he had one day maybe turned it around. It may be written made in China.
It's only made in China or Lesotho.
Exactly. You understand? So it shows how narrow-minded they are, that you can still think that Chinese are laborers who are peasants at this damn age. When 50 years back, China sat in a meeting and planned what they are doing today.
Yes.
They planned it 50 years back.
That we want to lift 1 billion people out of poverty.
And they did.
And they've done it. And all you need to do is travel to any Chinese city or a former rural area and see the tech. You know, I didn't see a single banknote in my 4 days in China because everything is on smartphone. From even just the people on the street, no one is carrying cash. Everything is
technology.
Digitized. Technology. I felt like I'd stepped into a Star Trek episode. of what the future might look
like.
Are they already?
Talking of the clip, one of the clips I saw this week, it was about T-shirts made by 100,000 T-shirts made by Chinese, and they are written 100 what boycott China, make America proud again.
And they're made in China.
And they're made in China for those Americans who are supporting Trump's move to wear them. I mean, these people are thinking outside the box. They're like, okay. They need 100,000 T-shirts. We'll make them for them to boycott us.
Sure.
And before you boycott me, I'll sell you the T-shirt that says boycott me. But also, how all these brands that we glorify, especially in South Africa, well, I'll talk for my country because I know how South Africans are with brands and labels and the Louis Vuittons and Adidas and Nike and all that, that are all made in China. Did you see what the Chinese have done, including your smartphone, your favorite phone, the iPhone, to say now, in order to spite the Americans, they just went all over social media, the Chinese factories and firms, and said people can import things as individuals at cost. Like you can get, and get your iPhone with something like $50, and you get the iPhone. They're spiting the Americans. And to stand up and say, we make this Louis Vuitton, we make this Adidas and this Jupe and all these other famous brands. They just put the label there to say made in Italy or made in France. But we as the Chinese, we make them. It has actually exposed Europe and the USA and other, you know, Western countries like the UK to say actually the Chinese have actually been feeding them and controlling their markets. They're just putting brands in the whole thing. One of the things I'm still proud of is that Jeep is still made by Americans in America, even if they have assembly plants somewhere. But what else that America does purely, and it's made by them and not by the Chinese or by Africans or any other Asian countries? In the past, I used to see brands like Nike. You'll find that, and it was because of cheap labor at the time. Most of Nike products were made in Indonesia before China took over.
Yes.
It was either Indonesia or countries like Malaysia, but Malaysia improved economically. They turned their economy around. They are now on high wages, so they moved to countries like Jakarta, you know, Indonesia, and all those, you know, Asian countries that they can still get cheap labor on.
Sure.
If you look at companies like Airbnb or Booking.com, even if you phone them, the people who are answering the phone are actually sitting in Asia.
Yeah.
Understand? They are not sitting in America. These are American companies. They are sitting in Asia, you know, Bangladesh.
There are even South African companies that have outsourced the call centers.
Outsourced those services.
Call centers to India, to China.
Exactly. And Americans, I don't know if they are playing their mind broadly in this instance, that those kind of services will suffer. You know, with the Airbnb business, do you know that they don't have an office? Airbnb and the other one, Uber. There's no office, headquarters or what. They don't even know who owns what, who's hired what, because it's operating from gadgets.
It's all online, yeah.
Yes, everything online. And they don't realize the damage it may happen. But you talking about corruption in this whole thing, I think they knew. That's why they rattled the world for a month. And then they stopped. You remember last week there was an incident on them buying shares before they dropped. And now they have 90 days, the cooling off period. They've created this cooling off period.
Yeah, because all these countries are kissing my ass.
Yes. Understand? And unfortunately, and not only African countries. I mean, when Donald Trump last week, I don't know the number now, last week he said 75 countries have called me to lining up to come and see me. 75, last week Africa has what, 54 countries. So who are the others? So I think they knew what they were doing, rattled the world. Only China and Russia are not rattled in this instance, and they've been fighting back. And me and you last week, we said, including Canada and Mexico, you know, they've done very well so far. So it's a wait-and-see situation with President Trump. But you know what? There's got to be cooling off. You said he will respond regarding ABC Jonas.
He will.
Remember, Americans take the, what do you call this, Easter weekend. They take it very serious. It's very big on them. So it has given us a breath a little bit.
Hey, let the man-child go search for Easter eggs there.
Easter eggs and turkey and all that.
At Pennsylvania Drive or whatever it is.
Yeah, and
he'll be back on Monday with chocolate all over his mouth. talking about how evil things are happening in South Africa. You'll see.
You know what? Let's just hope for the better, my brother. We need this bilateral relations with the USA, but it will take sober and level-headed minds. I don't think we should stop poking Trump's eye. It's not going to help us. Mm. I don't think we should be making mistakes that Donald Trump may say to Ramaphosa, but this one is taking me for granted. Mm. I checked Rasool out. He still brings the worst one now. They'll probably even come back and say, Mkhebisi Jonas is a communist.
Mm.
And then he comes from the Communist Party. They'll come back and say, those small, little, stupid things that are not supposed to be holding water.
Yeah.
Let's hope for the best.
In fact, speaking of holding water and leaks and stuff, let's talk about the GNU. Let's bring it back home. Let's talk about the GNU. Let's talk about VAT. You know, play was pressed on the VAT train. A lot of, you know, institutions were ready for the new VAT amount at the end of this month, from the end of this month, obviously, into May. But now there's been all these back and forths within the GNU. What is happening? Because it's too late to reverse the current VAT plan. Can it be amended to reverse it? Is that even an option?
Tato, the train has sailed. Oh, the ship has sailed. The train is gone.
I will pay money to see a train on water.
Carry on. English God me. Yeah, look, they say in Africans, just land for the train.
Yeah.
It's gone. VAT will not change. VAT will be implemented. The business, earlier on I said, in politics, it's run by business. Business has already informed us. They've implemented. Business told Mr. Ramaphosa and Mr. Steenhuisen to get into the boardroom or bedroom and find each other, which, you know, according to the reports that comes out of Mayor Helen Zille and Fikile Mbalula, in this out of the meeting they had, you know, last week on Saturday, it looks like they have found each other. But I did say, Tato, 2 weeks back, this noise about VAT and the budget and ANC chasing DA out and DA leaving the GNU, I did say 2-3 weeks back, it will not happen. I did say that come the last week of April, they will drink from the same cup. The people who have forgotten the hullabaloo noise about the 0.5% VAT, and everything will go back to normal. It just needed 2 things to happen.
Mm.
You understand? It needed business, the CEO of Investec and the CEO of FNB, leading business, to write to Steenhuisen and Ramaphosa and say, boys, and I said it last week, so they're going to tell them what to do.
Mm.
They did exactly what they were told to do because they're being controlled by business.
Mm.
Where are the voters? Where are the opposition? Neutralized. The EFF decided to join the DA. And I said, I don't understand, how is the EFF doing this with the DA when they are water and oil? Even if you boil them, they will still not be combined.
Mm.
To say they are joining the DA in their court against VAT, that was a smoke screen. Understand?
Mm.
It is not going to fly. The DA is not going to go and take the ANC government to court on VAT issues.
No, but the DA seemed to be very confident about this VAT court
that it
challenge.
Will be reversed.
Yes.
I've said 3 weeks back, Tato, anybody who goes to jail, let me tell you what my lawyer, advocate Mbada, says. He says, everybody who brings a matter to court, you are confident you will win.
Yes.
And then nobody takes a matter to court.
And statistically, the DA have won
majority of the cases they've taken forward. But in this instance, with the negotiations they had last week on Saturday, I do not see the DA continuing with this case that when they've said they've found each other. I don't see the DA continuing with this case because their ministers have to implement these three government acts or policies, the fiscal policy, the Bella Act, as well as the expropriation bill.
Mm.
Their ministers have to implement them. The Minister of Public Works is from the DA. The Minister of Basic Education for the Bella Act is from the DA. You understand? And they've got a deputy minister, whoever, who are serving in various government positions, that they need to implement this. It is not going to happen. People were fooled. The opposition parties were played.
Mm.
The only thing that Ramaphosa can do at the moment for the sake of pitching the GNU is to strengthen the GNU by convincing Songezo of the, what is Songezo, Party Rise Mzansi, and Herman Mashaba of Action SA to can join the GNU. Once those two can move into the GNU, then President Ramaphosa in the ANC in the GNU will have a stronger position without the DA. Not when I say without the DA, I don't mean DA being outside the GNU. I'm saying even where DA does not support some motions within a government, but they will have enough votes, like it has happened at the moment with the fiscal policy. Look, the status quo is going to remain. For me, I'm not shocked. I'm not convinced of anything. I don't believe in promises they are making. And I've said before, I've read the DA court papers. The vet thing, it's a tiny little thing on those court papers. They're mentioning it there. They're making the headlines. They behave like the mainstream media. The headline says something big, you know, and when we read the content, it's not actually talking to the headline. That's how DA has created this court case. The most part of this court case, the bulk of it, most of the paragraphs of their founding affidavit talks about the Bella bill as well as the expropriation bill. Most of it. That is just a tiny little thing. And DA is seen to be representing business. And business in South Africa, it is over 85% white.
Yeah.
And tax will benefit business. The DA is not going to go and shoot at their members and disadvantage them, because it is their members and their funders who are going to benefit from this tax rise. It's going to hit me and you in the pocket, but it's going to benefit the capitalists, is going to benefit the entrepreneurs, those who are there to make profit. And they can shift it to us. Even if tax does not benefit them directly, it benefits the state.
Yeah.
We need 59 billion to cover our budget deficit. SARS will be able to collect. But the business people and entrepreneurs, they're going to shift that to the consumer. Why would the DA, do we really think in our level heads that the DA is talking on behalf of consumers in South Africa? I don't think so. I think they may say, yeah, people are suffering, black people are need jobs, people are going to lose jobs, people are going to pay more for basic foods and all that. They may say it, but they don't care. If they were caring, they would be taking all the money of Cape Town from tourists, charging them 10 times more to Guguletu, Khayelitsha, Langa, where they are governing. And they are not doing that. Why do we think that the Democratic Alliance cares about the entire almost 50 million black people in this country when they can't take care of approximately 5 million black people in the Western Cape? I mean, for me, it doesn't make sense. You understand? It doesn't. It's a noise that we have to find reality about it. If the Democratic Alliance can spend millions of rands or billions to keep Cape Town as clean as it is, very clean city, high security, people are walking safe on the street, and they can control crime and toilets in the neighboring townships, their townships, where people are still using latrine toilets.
Yeah, because despite all of this infrastructure perfection, as it were,
yes,
you still have one of the highest murder rates on the planet right now.
Exactly. In the Western Cape, with all the technology of drones, and people, maybe they're even forgetting that the wardens that we call Mapanyas and Gaudi, the provincial wardens that Lusufi introduced last year, or was it 2023 or last year? The Western Cape were the first to introduce those wardens years back, actually. It was the same thing, different model. And why wouldn't they introduce those wardens in Wynberg? Why wouldn't they introduce them at Cape Flats, in Langa, where the murder rate in South Africa is very high in the areas I've just mentioned?
Do you think if this gang war from the Western Cape was happening in the suburbs and suburbia, do you think they might have approached it differently?
Absolutely. They would have pumped
if it
more
was,
money
if it was white kids and white gangs,
yes,
shooting at each other, killing each other.
It would have long. Look, there's a lot of mainly foreign white gangs in the Cape who are running in what you call this nightclubs and all that. There's few white people involved. Mm. But look at how they fight that and arrest and do that quickly once it starts affecting white people. And people can scream and say, but why is Fresh and Boots and talking racism? It's reality. Mm. Understand? But because it's the so-called colored people and black people killing each other, raping each other, murdering each other, they don't care. If it was happening in the prime areas of Stellenbosch and all other places, they would have actually even asked the head of state to deploy the army there to deal with some of these things.
But they've asked for the army.
You understand? Yeah, but then the president and the military people say, but we want to militarize the whole thing. Why is the Democratic Alliance doing, and I'll use one place, Cape Flats, doing what they have done for the city of Cape Town, the internal city at the Cape Flats, just that whole area, using all forms of security they have at their disposal, whether it's drones, whether it's patrols of policemen or wardens or metro police. Why wouldn't they do that? Why, if they know the problem, we have known, we grew up knowing the problem of Cape Flats.
Yeah.
Understand? I mean, for the last 40, 50 years, I've known about Cape Flats. Even if I've gone to Cape Town several times, I'm so scared that I don't even want to drive there and say, let me experience, I may become a victim. But they don't care. And all that I'm saying is, if South Africans think politicians, the problem we have made afresh is we have loaned our lives and the control of our lives to politicians, thinking that politicians, they do things for us. And they've proven over and over that they are not doing things for the people.
Yeah.
And I do not understand why the normal human beings who are in majority still believe that politicians do things for our best interest. Mm. It is in the interest of politicians for people to stay poor. That's why they will give you free money that you can use to buy drugs or alcohol, but they will not give you free money to can go to school or give you free education, don't give you money. You know, they're the same as banks that will give you money to can buy an expensive car but not to start a business. Mm-hmm. The politician will put you on grants to keep you poor, to make sure you come begging, so that come the time of elections, he will increase your social grant with 10 rands, with 20 rands there. That it is in their interest to stay in office. Because once we can reclaim the control of our lives and we realize that the power lies with us, not only at the ballot, you understand? If we can realize that, then we can take politicians out of office, or we can change them to run the administration of government as we want it to be run. But we have things the opposite way. We have things the other way around. We expect politicians to make sure we get jobs. You know, one of the things that I hate about our politics, everybody talks about job creation. Look, I'm looking for a job, okay? I need a job. But why are we not talking about creating entrepreneurs? Why are we talking about creating jobs? What about investing? How many summits and seminars and conferences? The president has just formed a new committee this week. You know, again, to go and assess, you know, to do a summit and a committee is going to look at growing the economy of the country and all those things. Committees after committees, I say, where are the results? We can't all be entrepreneurs. One of the viewers may argue that we can't all be entrepreneurs. There must be workers. Yes, but we have failed in creating jobs. And we are failing and the numbers are rising. Either we are doing it wrong or we don't even want to do it.
And we're not willing to admit that our education system as it stands is not churning out people who can actually do stuff or make stuff. People leave high school with next to zero skills.
Yeah.
And that is a problem.
Tato,
that is a problem.
Yesterday, there's a coffee container next to my place.
Yeah.
Normally, I ran out of the coffee filter paper, so I walked there. So I was walking the dog to go and buy coffee. And I had a conversation with the youngsters who had there, and they were asking me, "Hey, Brabo Tsaman, can you please tell us what is this story with China and the U.S.? Simplify it." And because they say on Saturday morning when we are on air, they are at the shop. And I simplified it. And I said, for example, when I was at school with you, Tato, we were taught tiye, locust, antenna. What nonsense was that? Why were we taught locust? We're not taught how locust is bad for crops. We were told, what is a locust? It has wings, it has antennas. What nonsense that a Chinese child.
But Ulebe say the thorax. I think Unofe Ilawe. The thorax. We see all those other parts are useless if they're not attached to a thorax.
But what did that do for us, bruh? What did it do for us? Chinese kids at age 5, they can actually assemble or make a microwave in less than an hour. That's what they are taught. As you said, people leave matric. Some they go to college and TVET colleges, and they come out and they are unemployable.
Sure.
So our planning towards job creation and employment, it is not talking to the challenges. Our education system is not talking to the needs of the economy.
I look forward to a time where an African child leaves high school and they can make things, build things, create things.
Yes.
You can even kill and skin an animal.
Yes.
Just basic life skills. Children are leaving, they can't do a thing. You can't even balance your own. Dude, you should be able to do your taxes when you leave high school.
Yes. Yes.
You should know basic accounting when you leave high school. You should know basics of I can service my own car leaving high school. Because you're teaching kids to do shit and make shit.
And that's all we need to do. We must start it at basic education level and give people skills. I mean, you know, I'm what do you call it when you are scared of heights? Like I can't stand on the balcony.
Sure.
But funny enough, as a child, because we had a coal stove at home, you know that once in 6 months I had to climb on top of that pitch asbestos roof to clean the chimney.
Yes.
You understand? Because with the coal we were burning, the chimney will be clogged. We used to do that. My son, and I blame me, not the system. My son can't even hold a forchel.
Yeah.
Can't use, you know, we used to cut lawn with scissors only. We didn't have lawn mowers at home. Imagine that whole lawn filling up the yard and you cut it with a scissor. That's why we're masculine, we're fit. But it's us as parents, it's the system. We bought too much into a system that fed us poison.
Yeah.
And we are continuing to give that to our children. They let them go to school. It's okay. And learn English and speak English better than us. It's fine. And learn mathematics and whatever. As we are told that you need mathematics to do anything in life. I don't know. I was the worst math student, you know, at school. But people must be able to even feed themselves. You know, you can take your kids next to a river and leave them. They will die of starvation because they can't fish. Even if they catch the fish playing, they will not know what to do with it. Yeah. They will tell you, look, these eyes are scaring me. Understand? You can put them in a crawl full of chickens and livestock. As you said, I don't kill animals. I'm scared of blood. But that's me there. But let the kids learn to do something.
The long and the short of it is we need to reimagine what our education system looks like.
Yes.
What are we equipping children with?
To do, yes.
Are we equipping children for the new world that we live in? You know, your average child leaving high school should be able to do basic coding. Just basic coding.
Exactly.
Just basic life. I mean, my 9-year-old he's a scout. Because I know that at scouts, they'll be taught skills that ordinarily is not going to learn at school.
That's cool.
Or that I might not have the capabilities myself to teach him. But because I understand that at scouts, every week, they're learning something that will add value to their lives. That should be coming standard at school. I'll tell you right now, when I have problems with my gate or with my electricity or with my plumbing, and I Google plumber, electrician, gate repairs. When I call, it's either a Zimbabwean or an Afrikaner man who answer to come and fix anything that I need fixed at the house.
Exactly. And that,
that is a problem. I'm not going to blame the Zimbabweans for that. Why is it that our people cannot do it themselves?
Because the system was designed, the apartheid system that we inherited and improved and endorsed. Because that's what we did since 1994. We first inherited the laws and the system of the apartheid government. And then we were fooled to say, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Okay? So what we did is we endorse them. We improve the apartheid education system. We were told to go and be graduates and have a master's degree without any work or practical experience that you have. And then you find that, you know, youth are depressed and are going through stress because they are graduates and they can't find jobs. Mm. Understand? And it's a very challenging situation whereby if we don't get our political office bearers, especially those in the education sector, to can think along those lines, to can think along the lines of what does the country need? Mm. Don't tell me we need engineers. That's a big word for me.
Yeah.
You understand? That's a big way. You know, I think South Africa need more artisans, more people who can produce things in mines and in plants of manufacturing, not just assembling parts of cars that come from Germany and Asia.
Yeah.
But that can go and build a car and we name it and it's our. Why can't we? If we have had factories of Ford, BMW, Mercedes, VW all over the country for so many years, how is it not possible that our people are not made to build a vehicle that is South African? If they can assemble a Mercedes-Benz C-Class and export it to all over the world, and it's the best, the Mercedes-Benz C-Class is the best selling Mercedes-Benz in the history of that company, and they are assembled in South Africa. And we want to tell me that those people who are sitting in that plant in the Eastern Cape are not capable of building a car from zero, when they are capable of assembling the parts, the engineers we have, that they can build an engine. And it is the system. It's operation. That's what operation is, by the way.
I mean, speaking of cars, nowadays when you apply for a job, the first thing they're going to tell you is, must have a driver's license. How is it that you're spending all these years in school, but you can't come out of high school at 18 without a driver's license? What are we teaching children in school?
Yes.
That we can't even have a child leave school able to service their own car, change a spare wheel, change oil, change spark plugs, and have a driver's license.
Let me even flip the coin.
They're there the whole day, but they leave at the age of 18, 19, 20, and they can't build anything,
people will
fix anything, plant anything.
They can't afford it. Driver's license is expensive. I've got a different view.
Something has to change.
Yes, I've got a different view.
Yeah.
If the job market, one of the requirements, actually almost every job I see, almost every, even if you are not going to be a driver.
Sure.
If one of the prerequisites is a driver's license, at least a code 8, I don't know what it's called these days, B, whatever, as a requirement, why are we not introducing driving?
Sure.
As a subject at high school.
But that's the point I'm making.
What is that?
Driver's ed or whatever it's called.
Yeah. It's a grade 10. Why are we not introducing a learner license at standard 8, grade 10, a driving license at grade 11, and by the time you finish matric, you also have your driver. Why is our curriculum not including that?
That's precisely
why
my point.
Why is our curriculum not including, must say, like they say, you must have one mother tongue, you must have two languages. One must be the mother tongue, and then one is a secondary language. Why are we not adding to say one of the subjects that every child in South Africa, it must be artisan focused. It must be something practical. Whether we used to do agriculture.
A life skill.
Yes, a life skill. Why are we not introducing that as a compulsory subject at school from grade 1 up to grade 10? There must be a life skill subject that is compulsory for all the kids. And you can choose any. You can choose any according to your capabilities. Like I said, I loved music, but I'm not artistic. So I couldn't go into the music class because we had music as extramural activity. What did I take? I took agriculture, and I used to have the best carrots because it was the easy thing to plant. And that's why I still have even green.
Now he wears glasses because he never ate the carrots.
I was selling them, bro. I was selling the carrots. I was not eating them. And I didn't know that I needed to eat the carrots. I thought it's a lie that when you eat carrots, it improves your eyesight.
Anyway, we've run out of time because we went there.
It was important for us to offer him bad times.
We were also supposed to speak about what's happening in South Sudan because people are dying. South Sudan has a dire situation that I don't think is making enough headlines. I don't think we care enough.
You know, Tato, when I read two or three articles about what is happening in Sudan, actually. Not, I don't even think it's in South Sudan.
Yeah.
It's in Sudan, the main country, because this is the battle between Khartoum and what is the capital? I forgot what's the capital of Sudan. The two... Khartoum is the capital. And the other area with oil mineral rich area, there they always had a fight. Do you know according to the United Nations report that came out this week, every 2 hours, a child is dying in Sudan.
Yeah.
They say it's more than, now we are talking the humanitarian thing, and I don't say Palestine or Ukraine is not as important. Human life is human life. Every 2 hours, there's a child dying of hunger in Sudan. And the African Union leaders that wore their suits and flew to Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky to try and stop the war in between Ukraine and Russia. The EU is sitting right in Addis Ababa next to Sudan, fresh. And they are saying nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
The number of children dying in Sudan of hunger, not of Israel bombs, of hunger.
Mm.
Every 2 hours, a child is dying there, and African leaders are quiet about it. You understand? All 54 African states are quiet. We are actually worried about the minerals of the DRC more than the children of Sudan. And then the other interesting part about it is that, guess who has called the meeting for peace talks of Sudan? The UK. The meeting
London,
is in the UK.
It's in London, yeah.
And it's attended on one side by the United Arab Emirates, which are seen to be supporting the rebel forces there. And then the Sudanese government is not invited to those talks.
Mm.
United Kingdom calls for a peace talks of the Sudan. They invite on one side United Arab Emirates, and then on the other side it's Turkey and Egypt that are seen to be supporting the Sudanese forces. And they're inviting these people to go and have, now they're going to have a meeting without the affected people, the party itself, or the government of Sudan. And the African Union is quiet about this whole thing. These are the kind of leaders we have. And that's why people like Captain Ibrahim Traore of Burkina Faso are withdrawing out of the African Union because they're not saying anything about the lives of their own people, but they were concerned about the lives of the white people in Ukraine. They were concerned that President Putin and Russia is killing children of Ukraine, while the children of Sudan and the DRC and all that, they're dying every day of hunger. Nothing else, not bombs, because they are sitting in refugee camps or UN camps for safety purposes, because they've been displaced. Over 12 million people have been displaced in Sudan. And there's no food because the so-called, what do you call these vehicles, aid and vehicles cannot reach those camps. And we are not sitting here and thinking of taking military choppers or military planes and drop people food there for people to eat.
Mm.
We are not sitting and thinking as a nation.
But shouldn't the UN be doing food drops if this one is to happen then?
Yeah, but the UN, without, why should it be the UN when it doesn't start with the African Union first? You understand? They are here. The UN can be doing, but they will need help of African countries to be able to do that.
Mm.
But let's leave the UN out. They are busy writing reports. Let's leave them out. What are we doing? If there's a war in my ward or street, why would I worry about the police station when I know somebody's being murdered next door? Before I call the police, I may try and save that person's life. And like I said, the African Union is sitting in Addis Ababa. Egypt, it's next to Sudan. The people who are supposed to think for Africa, they are sitting maybe 1,000 kilometers away, and they don't even talk about it. And I have a problem with the fact that the UN goes and does a research, does a report, and tell us there's famine killing people there, there's hunger killing people there, and the African Union is saying nothing about it. But also that I'm tired of boardroom meetings. I'm tired of diplomats. When there's a war and you go into a boardroom, there's hunger. You don't need the boardroom. Yes, you can plan, but you know the war in Sudan has been going on now for 2 years. Didn't we think, didn't we plan? And the war for what? For minerals. Caused by what? United Arab Emirates, Turkey, the United Kingdom. And then when the likes of Ibrahim Traore chased these people out, people start questioning them to say we don't need military dictatorship. If the UK, the UAE, Turkey, and others were not in Sudan, this would have not been happening. Where are these rebels getting the arms from? Where are they getting money from? The same story as the DRC. They are being funded by foreign forces to destabilize the country and kill the African children, and we are not doing anything about it. I mean, at this damn age, with all the technology and military equipment that we they're sitting in the DRC now. We couldn't take those military equipment to take food, help the Red Cross, or what we call the South African group of, there's the Red Cross, there's Doctors Without Borders, there's a South African famous one as well.
Doctor.
Gift of the Givers.
Imtiaz Suleiman.
Yes. Why don't we say to those people, let's go and take food? We were brave enough. And still, I'm saying thumbs up to South Africa, even if they've removed the foot from the pedal, to go to save the lives of the Palestinian children. And we went to the ICC, then we went to the ICJ. Right now, Benjamin Netanyahu, the murderous prime minister of Israel, is a wanted man in the world by the ICJ, even if he doesn't hold water. We did that, us as South Africa. Why can't we stand up and do the same in South Sudan? Food, take food there. We send our soldiers to die in the DRC for what we still don't know. But we can't send our soldiers to Sudan to take food, not to interfere, to take food there. That's what we call humanitarian aid. Understand? We are not interfering with the affairs of that country. We are doing humanitarian. Why are we not doing that? Where are our media? Where is Mme Motshekga to can take two Boeings or whatever jumbo jets full of food and take them there? We have done it so many times in the world when there were floods and tornadoes. We have done it. Why are we not doing it for Sudan? And it is it because our political office bearers have no business interest in Sudan? Is it because of the last time we got involved in the Sudanese conflict? It was during President Mbeki's time. If you recall, at some stage, he was the peace negotiator there. And that was diplomatic government to government, you understand? At some stage, he was the president of the African Union, and that's why he was asked to can handle that. But in modern day, what have we done as a nation? And I'm saying, if we can do it for the Ukrainians, if we can do it for the Palestinians and anybody else, why can't we do it for our own children in Sudan? And that's the challenge we are sitting with as a nation. And or the lives of the Sudanese children do not matter to anybody. And we can't intervene or help. And that's my challenge with the African Union. You know my position with the AU and the United Nations. They are useless, toothless dogs that I'm very happy that Trump has reduced money. I think Mr. Trump can actually stop funding any of this international organization because they are useless. Men in suits sitting in well-conditioned offices in the beautiful Addis Ababa, what are they doing every day for this continent? What are they doing? Instead of wearing suits and going, now they must wear suits and go to bust Trump to say, please don't punish us. They couldn't sit and think how we can use our God-given natural resources to feed our nation. They actually want to go to a country that is nowhere near us with mineral resources to beg for money. I'll be a very useless father if I can't plow and cook for my children. And I ask my neighbor, so when you cook, please dish for my kids. When I'm sitting with a mealy meal and rice in the house, just because I can't cook, then I ask my neighbors to cook and feed my kids. Because that's exactly what we are doing. We are sitting with wealth. That we are failing to take it and turn it around to can feed our children. We instead give it to Bas in the UK and Bas in the US. And then the Chinese have joined the bandwagon. Now we go to them and say, can you please help us with foreign aid that they have generated through our minerals? That's what we have become. It's you understand, that's what we have become. We give them coltrane, diamonds, gold, tourism land. They even come and hunt our lions. They come and hunt, yeah. Then after we go and we buy crocodile shoes, crocodile skin shoes and shoes, they just bring them with the skins of our animals.
Sure.
That's what we have become. And I'm saying we need better leaders who can think for this continent, and we don't need old ones. These old ones, Mr. Ramaphosa must retire. They are not adding value. Like they are failing. You know, they are like the apartheid government that taught me a new locust. That teaching these ones nothing. And we still take these people as leaders. I don't know. You're making me upset with your African leaders.
There's a saying that a dependent electorate is a good electorate. Why would you teach people to not depend on you? Why would you teach people to be independent? Why would you teach people to be able to survive without you?
Mm.
The more used to you, the more dependent they are, is the saying.
Unfortunately, my brother, that's what they taught us. They told us that we are going to vote. We fought. People died.
Mm.
The Chris Hani's.
There are people still missing.
There are people still missing. You know, talking of death quickly, you know, something also made me upset, and I know many will critique me. You just see that the National Prosecuting Authority.
Already looking at the death
the inquest of the Albert Chief Luthuli. Albert Luthuli.
Yes, sir.
You know, Tata, this is madness.
Mm.
I'm telling you. Yes, the Luthuli family will find closure. It's okay to do that. You understand? But I look at Chief Albert Luthuli as a leader of a nation.
Mm.
The only good thing we could have done in honor of Luthuli was to make sure that what he was murdered for or what he died for is the glory of the people. The only glory is to give people a better life, because that's what he was murdered for. He was fighting for the freedom. And what is freedom? It's people who are really free and living a better life in their country.
Mm.
I think the best thing to honor a person who died for the liberation of people is to make sure people live well.
Mm.
People have facilities to health. We instead want to go and investigate whether he was murdered or what. Let's honor the man by doing the right thing.
Mm.
Give people freedom, education. Yes, the family can follow the inquest. But again, it says to me, what does it say to hundreds of thousands of other activists who don't have prominent names that died? I mean, if you read Umkhonto West's history, not the political party, the military wing, they still have members. I know families in Soweto whose kids went into exile. They never came back. They never got their bodies.
Mm.
What about those? What about the Cradock Four? What about the Sabelo Palmas and the Jaftha Masemolas who were killed mysteriously?
Mm.
Are we going to sit and have inquest just because this family is prominent? This one can afford. I'm saying, let us honor our fallen liberation heroes, whether they were soldiers or guerrillas or political leaders, by doing the right thing that they died for, for the nation, by putting the people first. For me, that's honor.
Mm.
That's glory. You know, wherever ancestor Luthuli is, he will look at us and say, my children, I've died for you. I was pushed off the train. Mm. I was killed. But you are free and you are being taken care of by a former liberation movement led government at the moment.
I didn't die for nothing.
I didn't die for nothing. Now you are going to do the inquest while probably the men's, you know, there's two kids of Chief Luthuli that are still alive. They are both in their 90s.
Mm.
One is a former ambassador, a very decorated, well-decorated ambassador. And the honor we can do for this family and for Chief Albert Luthuli is to make sure that the things he envisaged and he died for, the government is doing them.
Mm.
For me, that's glory and that's honor.
Absolutely.
Understand? Mm. Let's go and look for the bodies of other guerrillas, even soldiers and comrades and guerrillas of the ANC that were killed by ANC people.
Mm.
Have honor and give the families of the... or tell them where the bones of their children are. To this day, the Mashinini family still do not know what happened to Tsietsi Mashinini, the leader of the 1976 apartheid, to this day.
Mm.
Understand? And why? Is it because he was not an ANC leader or member? So, for me, honor is when you do the right thing as a public office bearer.
Mm.
And we are failing as public office bearers to can do the honorable thing, to make sure that kids don't die in pit latrines. Understand? We have been getting that people don't spend 7-8 months without clean water. And for me, that's glory. That's the glory I will give to the founders of the liberation movement in Africa. Not these cosmetic things they are doing. This is very cosmetic, man. This cosmetic, tangible things. Right now, the KwaZulu-Natal government issued a statement this week, a warning, a level 2 yellow what warning that there may be floods this Easter weekend. We know people are going to die.
Mm.
We know people are going to die in KwaZulu-Natal this weekend because of floods.
Mm.
It happens every year. And you've got a government in KwaZulu-Natal They know this thing happens every year. People die every year. Do you think they care? It goes back to what I said. They don't care. They actually issue a warning that you are going to die through flooding this weekend. And people die. Mm. And they say we bury them, we'll raise funds to go and rebuild. Then they steal the money for rebuilding. Mm. That's the kind of leadership we have in this country. Amen, my brother.
Amen. Brother B, where do we find you online?
Botsangm@gmail.com and 082-485-9100 on telephone and WhatsApp. And then social media handles at Botsangm.
You spoke so much, it rained.
I spoke so much what?
It rained.
Oh, it's raining.
Onisizepula.
I know. Did I talk too much, Trevor?
Thank you, B. No, I think your passion. It's just your passion.
No, thanks,
and I love your passion. No, I'm here for your passion.
Thank you very much. I also love this. And thanks to the followers and the viewers. Their engagement, they keep me busy. Eh?
Yes, sir.
You know, my sister, after you went to see my mother last week, sent me a message. I was actually saying to say, please tell Fresh that we thank him for keeping you sane for the last 2 years. Because if you were not working on this show, you'd have gone completely mad. Mm. And he said, Abbas, thank you for keeping me safe and being a big brother. They say you can marry one of them or any free.
You know that time you're older than me, so I don't know why you like calling me Nkhon. You're older than me. You're my first man.
Fresh, 4 months.
Yeah, 4 months is a lot.
Yeah, but it's a lot. Eh? By the time you were born, I was already swallowing the solids.
No, by the time I was born, I'm sure you had a beard. B, thank you very much, brother man.
Yes, my brother. Thank
and
you.
It was dope meeting your mother last week.
No.
You know my problem is a lot of us relate with people, but we've never met the mothers.
Yes.
So for me, it's very important that we must stop meeting people as mothers at funerals.
Yeah.
Or meeting family members at funerals. We need to change that.
I'm proud of you.
And that was part of me changing that.
Yeah. Thanks, and I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. And we are done. Thank you for tuning in to Wow What a Week #Politrix coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Trevor and Pezulu Works for the cinematography, Otis the Floor Fraser for all of our imaging, and Keletso Modisa King, our executive producer. But most importantly, you for tuning in, for liking, subscribing, sharing, and most importantly, giving us your views on the episode. Please feel free to comment on YouTube and across all social media. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.